Welcome to the Living Healthy Podcast, where you can improve your quality of life by making solid and informed decisions. I'm your host, Eddie Randall. Thank you for joining me for another phenomenal episode of the Living Healthy Podcast. May is National Hepatitis Month, and according to the Journal of Hepatology, 2 million people die annually around the world due to liver disease. This is the perfect time to talk about the liver and how important it is to human health. Tonight, I'll be discussing some common liver issues. In addition, I'll be discussing ways we can improve liver health and function. Tonight's podcast is entitled, A Healthy Liver Means a Healthy Body. The liver. The liver has always been a very interesting organ for me. I've been astounded at the many processes and functions that the liver is responsible for or is a part of. According to Columbia University Irving Medical Center, the liver performs over 500 vital functions in the body. In essence, anything we eat or drink gets digested and processed through our intestines, then enters the blood and is absorbed by the liver. The hormone cholecystokinin is secreted by the small intestines and helps the liver to produce bile. Bile is a yellow fluid used for digestion and is held in the gallbladder. When bile duct or liver problems arise due to an illness, bile can build up in the liver. This can cause jaundice of the skin and eyes, which is the yellowish color that you see in patients with liver problems. Bilirubin is the yellow-orange pigment of bile. I will discuss jaundice later on in the podcast. The liver also produces a protein called albumin. This protein is vital in that it prevents substances from leaking into tissues in the body. The liver helps to prepare nutrients and minerals for the body to use. It also breaks down medications to make it easy for the body to use. This happens when cytochrome P450, which are a family of enzymes which break down drugs so they can become water soluble and eventually they'll get released in bile. Drugs can affect the liver adversely when abused, and drugs can also affect the liver when taken as recommended. However, the majority of times that the liver is drastically impacted is when drugs are abused. The liver can be impacted directly, or the bile ducts can be impacted, affecting the flow of bile from the liver. The liver filters the blood by getting rid of old red blood cells and ridding the body of toxins through urine and stool. Our liver essentially breaks down chemicals into ones that are safe for our body to handle and eliminate. We're continually surrounded and bombarded by toxic chemicals in personal health care products, pesticides in foods, toxins in certain food containers, and toxins in water. The liver works with the immune system to keep us healthy, and just like the immune system, the liver filters and removes these toxins from our bodies every day without us knowing. The liver contains B and T lymphocytes and monitors pathogens and acts accordingly to help eliminate viruses, bacteria, and waste products. Blood clotting is another function that the liver plays a role in. The liver produces factors that help the body absorb vitamin K, which is essential in blood clotting. I talked about blood clotting and blood disorders in a two-part podcast. If you did not get a chance to check those out, I would advise you to do so. They're called Hematology, How to Live Healthy with Blood Disorders, Part 1 and 2. Prothrombin is a protein made by the liver, and it's used by the immune system to properly clot a cut or gash. Any liver disease can prevent the liver from producing prothrombin, cascading into other disorders or abnormalities. Cholesterol is another process managed by the liver. The liver not only creates cholesterol, but it can help the body to eliminate it through bile. Cholesterol is extremely important to the body. The liver needs cholesterol to make proteins, and cholesterol is vital for the plasma membranes of our cells. In fact, Harvard Health Publishing states that 20% of cholesterol comes from the food that we ingest, and the liver makes up the other 80%. Over time, eating too much food that is high in cholesterol can lead to fatty liver disease. I'll talk about fatty liver disease a little later on in the podcast. Diet and exercise can help to maintain a healthy blood cholesterol level. An annual visit with your PCP can help you to stay on top of your cholesterol. Creation of plasma proteins are also a job that the body depends on the liver to do. These plasma proteins are vital in transportation of hormones, lipids, and other essential substances like minerals and vitamins. In addition, enzymes and coenzymes are produced to aid in cellular processes. Proteins also help the body in maintaining structure and overall cell function. One of the most important metabolic functions is the removal of ammonia from the body. Ammonia is very toxic, and the liver breaks it down into a water-soluble waste product that can be easily removed from the body during urination. Amino acids are synthesized by the liver and are used in a multitude of processes throughout the body. The liver is also great at breaking down fat so we can utilize it for energy. If too much protein is detected, then amino acids can undergo a process turning them into fat so they can be stored. Risk factors for liver disease. There are many factors for liver disease. Some of the most important are genetic abnormalities, alcohol abuse, a high-fat diet, diabetes, unprotected sex, getting tattoos, sharing needles, liver cancer, and liver cysts. Genetic conditions, for the most part, are hit or miss and sometimes can't be avoided. As development of any condition is pretty much hit or miss because of meiosis and mitosis. Alcohol abuse is another major factor. However, this depends on who's conducting the study. Many studies state that a glass of wine can actually be good for you. This is actually due to the antioxidants that are in the grapes. However, continuous abuse and the use of sulfites can lead to the development of health issues, which can include liver disease. A high-fat diet can lead to fatty liver disease, which can lead to weight gain, which can unfortunately result in the development of diabetes. Diabetes on its own can lead to fatty liver disease, liver cancer, and liver failure. Having unprotected sex with strangers or multiple people can lead to a plethora of sexually transmitted diseases. Hepatitis B can be acquired sexually, which can cause inflammation of the liver. Getting tattoos can also lead to hepatitis as well. If the ink is shared or the needle is shared, this raises your risk significantly. The same can be said for sharing needles, in particular for illicit drugs. Speaking of needles, nurses put themselves at risk every time they have to give someone an injection, as there is always a potential for an accidental needle stick. Every year, just under 500,000 nurses and healthcare workers are involved in an accidental needle stick. Liver cancer and liver cysts can develop due to genetic abnormalities. Other sources include foods treated with certain pesticides, foods using cancer-causing preservatives, and environmental exposure to toxins. The most common liver diseases and ways to avoid them. Liver failure occurs in conjunction to abuse of acetaminophen, illegal drugs, hepatitis, fatty liver disease, and alcohol abuse. It can be life-threatening as the liver is essential in filtering the body of toxins. It can be acute or chronic, but tends to happen over a period of years. There are several ailments that can lead to liver failure. As mentioned, the liver stores excess fat to process its energy when we need it. However, fatty liver disease can occur when excess fat builds up in the liver. There are two types of fatty liver disease: non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and alcoholic fatty liver disease. Non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is actually a class of liver diseases that people obtain who drink little to no alcohol. Liverfoundation.org states that about 100 million Americans have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Liver cells can accumulate excess fat, and the liver can become inflamed, resulting in a more serious condition called NASH, which is non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. The liver can scar, and cirrhosis can occur. A high-fat diet, alcohol abuse, Diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and genetics are the primary causes of fatty liver disease. Symptoms include jaundice, abdominal pain, diarrhea, edema, and fatigue. Now, what I found surprising and interesting, as there are no medications to treat non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. This is something that we have to look at in regard to preventing it from happening. That being said, genetics play a factor in non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, but it is not something like bad eyesight that is passed on to offspring. In regard to fatty liver disease, what is passed on is the genetic predisposition. So you may have a greater risk of developing it easier than someone else, depending on your family genes. Furthermore, if you do have it, weight loss is one of the easiest things and is the primary way to combat non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. I strongly suggest exercise regimen within your limits. This can include cycling, weightlifting, jogging, walking, and swimming. I do not agree with bariatric surgery, as I am against surgery unless it's absolutely necessary. However, I also understand that everyone's situation is not the same, and gastric bypass may be your best option as a starting point to healthy and successful weight loss. Now that you're on the track to reversing fatty liver disease, you have to change what and how you eat. Water is the drink of choice and should be consumed with meals and in between meals. Please refrain from sugary drinks and carbonated drinks. Stay away from pork and greasy foods and replace all fried foods with their baked counterpart. As an example, instead of fried chicken, bake the chicken and eat it without the skin. The majority of fat in chicken is found in the skin. Utilize olive oil and limit salt intake. You can even replace beef with salmon, and omega-3 fatty acids can also help your liver. Green leafy vegetables like kale, spinach, and collard greens are good. Make sure to use turmeric in meals or drink turmeric milk. There are many recipes online on how to make it. The curcumin in turmeric not only cleanses the liver with its antioxidant properties, it also helps to reduce cholesterol, which aids in reducing fatty liver disease. In addition, make use of fruits like apples, bananas, blueberries, strawberries, mangoes, cantaloupes, etc. These are all very good sources of fiber and antioxidants, which can help reverse liver disease. Alcoholic fatty liver disease, or alcoholic steatohepatitis, can occur when an excessive amount of alcohol is consumed over a long period of time. Harvard Medical School states that a man that consumes more than 15 alcoholic drinks in a one-week period is considered to be a heavy drinker. They also state that when a woman has more than 8 alcoholic drinks in 1 week, she is also considered a heavy drinker. These are conditions that can put a person at risk to develop alcoholic fatty liver disease. Misuse of alcohol can lead to excess fat deposits storing up in the liver. Often, this condition can be asymptomatic, and in other cases, symptoms can be nonspecific. Typical symptoms of this disease include nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain, jaundice, ascites, diarrhea, loss of appetite, and in more severe cases, testicular atrophy and bloody stools. One or more of these symptoms may be present, prompting a person to seek care from their PCP. The doctor would more or less order blood work to look at their liver enzymes. In other cases, depending on the severity of the symptoms, imaging can be done in conjunction with a liver biopsy. As far as treatment for alcoholic fatty liver disease, the biggest and most obvious thing is to stop drinking. For some, that can be easier said than done. Addiction can seem incapable of overcoming, but it can be done. I have seen patients who have had lung cancer and continue to smoke, as well as patients who were in liver failure and continued to drink. Addiction can be conquered. In the description of the podcast, I will have included a phone number as well as a link to the Substance and Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. As with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, there's no real medical treatment other than the obvious to stop drinking. In addition, the diet and exercise advice that I mentioned for non-alcoholic fatty liver disease can also be applied when the condition is caused by alcohol. I'll talk about hepatitis shortly, but since I'm talking about alcohol-related liver disease, I will add alcoholic hepatitis here. As alcoholic fatty liver disease can lead to alcoholic hepatitis. This is simply inflammation of the liver due to the abuse of alcohol. Symptoms are the same for alcoholic steatohepatitis, and as far as the treatment, diet and exercise, as mentioned a moment ago, they are the same for alcoholic hepatitis. As far as medical treatment, there is controversy out there regarding treatment. The condition involves corticosteroids. Long-term use of steroids is not only bad for your body, it can also make your liver condition much, much worse. On the Journal of Clinical and Translational Hepatology, there's an article by Sabari, Dehabani, Young, and others. The article is called Current Management of Alcoholic Hepatitis and Future Therapies. They state that corticosteroids have been used with conflicting results because of the propensity to cause infection. They go on to state that they are no longer used as they do not improve the patient's condition. Cirrhosis is when the liver becomes inflamed and scarred over time due to an illness that has caused the scar tissue. Illnesses such as fatty liver disease, hepatitis, and alcohol abuse can eventually lead to cirrhosis. This scar tissue builds up and prevents the liver from properly functioning. Symptoms include jaundice, nausea, loss of appetite, confusion, bloody and/or light-colored stools. Unfortunately, cirrhosis is a late-stage permanent condition, but it is treatable. Treatments include lifestyle changes, which include avoiding or eliminating the problem that causes cirrhosis. As an example, alcoholic cirrhosis is caused by alcohol abuse or alcoholic fatty liver disease. Dietary changes involve the foods that I have previously mentioned. These can help the liver to heal. I would advise to exercise if possible, depending on your condition, and as a last resort, a liver transplant may be an option. Liver cysts are small round pockets that form in the liver. They can be filled with air, some can be solid, and yet others are semi-solid. Doctors are not completely sure what causes them to form in the liver. However, they have been linked to malformation of the liver while in the womb. In addition, they've been linked to tapeworm infections. When they are genetic, they are a condition called polycystic liver disease. In some cases, these cysts can spread and develop in the kidneys. There's an article that was published in Gastroenterology and Hepatology by Dr. Gregory Everson. He states that there are two forms of the genetic ailment, polycystic liver disease in isolation, which are just the liver cysts, and autosomal dominant polycystic kidney disease, where there are cysts on the liver and the kidney. In some instances, the cysts can cause no symptoms. General symptoms, however, include abdominal pain, flank pain, heartburn, vomiting, and distension. Treatment includes antibiotics for the tapeworm infection, a cystectomy, and in worst-case scenarios, a liver or kidney transplant. Diet for liver cysts is pretty much the same as for fatty liver disease, such as walnuts, water, coffee, salmon, tuna, turkey, chicken, and leafy greens. Exercise is pretty universal in regard to liver issues and can include cycling, weightlifting, jogging, walking, and swimming. From this point forward, when I mention exercise or diet as treatment, they'll pretty much be universal. If there are any deviations or additions, I will mention them. If you have developed liver cysts due to tapeworms, I would avoid pork, sashimi, and sushi. That being said, make sure to cook food thoroughly. Some bacteria can wall themselves off and form endospores and survive freezing and become reactivated when the temperature warms up. The same can be said for some parasites and tapeworms. It's vital to cook food at the recommended temperatures. The CDC states to cook meat at 145 degrees, ground meat at 160 degrees, and whole or ground chicken at 165 degrees. Make use of a good cooking thermometer. I would advise to not just turn up the heat when cooking. We may be tempted to do this in a crunch for time, but not only will you most likely ruin your meal, you may ruin your pots and pans with high heat. Also, the high heat can wear down the coating on nonstick cookware, resulting in toxins being released. In stainless steel cookware, you run the chance of warping, discoloring, and causing some metal to become released into food over time. I wanted to take a moment to say thank you for supporting the podcast. The Living Healthy Podcast is listed on many platforms, including Anchor, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Bullhorn, and many others. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. And don't forget to check out the Living Healthy Podcast channel on YouTube. Also, if you have any questions or would like me to discuss a particular topic, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please contact me at livinghealthy@gmail.com. Liver cancer, aka hepatocellular carcinoma, can occur through DNA mutation or can be brought on by a liver infection such as hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and fatty liver disease. Symptoms include white or off-colored stools, jaundice, abdominal pain, fatigue, vomiting, and weight loss. Some of the risk factors are obesity, alcohol abuse, and diabetes. There are four stages of liver cancer, with the first being a tumor and the fourth stage resulting in the cancer metastasizing to other organs in the body. Depending on genetics and when the cancer is detected, the average life expectancy is approximately 5 years, as liver cancer can spread very quickly. Treatment for the ailment includes surgical removal of the tumor as well as a liver transplant. It all depends on the stage of the cancer and the patient's overall health. Some other treatments include radiofrequency ablation and microwave ablation. Both techniques involve the use of heat that is sent through an electrode to destroy the cancer cells. I know I mentioned a 5-year survival rate, which can be based on several factors. However, as with almost all ailments, there are many research studies and clinical trials that you can be involved in. This, of course, is a decision you can make with your doctor if other options can't be done. As far as things you can do on your own, exercise and food for prevention are universal. Bile duct cancer, aka cholangiocarcinoma, is not a common cancer, but unfortunately, it can be very serious. The bile ducts go from the liver to the small intestines, and they're responsible for waste removal from the liver as well as aiding in the digestion of fats. As with liver cancer, bile duct cancer can arise from DNA mutations and diseases of the liver. In addition, people 50 or older have a propensity for developing this condition, juxtaposed to those who are under 50. There are two types of bile duct cancer. They're designated by where they start. The two types are intrahepatic bile duct cancer and extrahepatic bile duct cancer. With intrahepatic bile duct cancer, this occurs when the bile ducts inside the liver develop cancer cells and grow. With extrahepatic bile duct cancer, this cancer forms in the ducts outside of the liver. There are two types of extrahepatic cancer, and they are distal bile cancer and perihilar bile cancer. Distal bile cancer involves cancer in the bile duct as it passes through the pancreas and into the small intestines. Perihilar bile duct cancer occurs where the bile ducts exit on the right and left sides of the liver. Symptoms include off-colored stools, jaundice, dark urine, abdominal pain, unexplained weight loss, fever, nausea, and vomiting. Treatment depends on the type and aggressiveness of the cancer. This includes surgery, radiation therapy, chemotherapy, and liver transplant. As far as things you can do on your own, exercise and food for prevention are universal. Hepatitis is perhaps the most commonly known liver issue. There are five types: A, B, C, D, and E. I'm only going to cover A through C, as A, B, and C are the most common types of hepatitis. This condition is inflammation of the liver and can be caused by viral infection, alcohol abuse, and medication abuse. Symptoms include jaundice, off-colored stools, abdominal pain, fatigue, and unexplained weight loss. Hepatitis A is caused by poor hygiene via contact with feces and is passed on through contamination in water, food, or direct contact, which includes sexual contact with an infected person. The hepatitis B virus is caused by contact with an infected person via blood, saliva, and semen. This includes sharing needles, accidental needle sticks, and sexual contact. It can even be spread from an infected mother to the infant during birth. Hepatitis B is the most common hepatitis. The World Health Organization states that almost 300 million people worldwide have the infection. In addition, they state that as of 2019, there have been 1.5 million new infections annually. The hepatitis C virus is the most common, and it's caused by sharing needles. Other ways of transmission include getting a tattoo or piercing with unsterilized equipment, having unprotected sex with an infected individual, and obtaining it at birth from an infected mother. Treatment options vary depending on the type of hepatitis that you have. For hepatitis A, the main treatment is to improve hygiene and to get plenty of rest and drink lots of water. You'll want to refrain from having sex and sharing dishes and silverware until the virus subsides. For hepatitis B, antiviral drugs are the main form of treatment. For more advanced conditions, a hospital stay and/or a liver transplant are options. For hepatitis C, antiviral medications are also the primary form of treatment. Getting plenty of rest, drinking lots of water, and avoiding alcohol are also highly recommended. In regard to exercise, I would only advise it if your doctor has advised it. With hepatitis infections, you really want to allow your body to rest and give your liver time to heal, as that is the most important factor. As far as foods, they are universal, and they are the ones that I mentioned earlier in the podcast. Next, I'll be discussing immune disorders involving the liver. The two I will be discussing are autoimmune hepatitis and primary biliary cholangitis. Autoimmune hepatitis is exactly as the name implies. The immune system attacks the hepatic cells of the liver. The exact cause is unknown, but if left untreated, conditions like cirrhosis can occur. Symptoms include jaundice, fatigue, enlarged liver, body pain, rectal bleeding, itching, and in women, it can cause menstrual periods to stop. Immunosuppressants like prednisone are used to suppress the immune system. However, care should be taken with any kind of steroid, as long-time use can lead to other complications. In worst-case scenarios, a liver transplant is the only recourse. Primary biliary cholangitis is another autoimmune disorder. The immune system attacks the bile ducts and destroys them. When this happens, the bile can build up in the liver, leading to liver scarring. Treatment options include obeticholic acid. This medication decreases bile production and aids in its removal from the liver. The other option is a liver transplant. For both conditions, exercise and diet are universal. Next, I'll discuss a few inherited liver diseases. And they are alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, Gilbert syndrome, Wilson disease, hemochromatosis, and hyperoxaluria. Alpha-1 antitrypsin is a protein that the liver produces that protects the lungs from being attacked by the immune system. A deficiency of this protein is called alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency. This condition occurs when a child inherits a copy of the defective gene from each parent. This condition is fairly rare, as the American Lung Association states that there are roughly 100,000 people in the United States with this condition. You need adequate amounts of this protein to protect your lungs from damage. The outcome of this protein deficiency is damage to the alveoli of the lungs. This can make you more susceptible to pneumonia, cold viruses, flu viruses, and COVID-19. The symptoms include shortness of breath, never-ending allergies, liver cancer, cirrhosis, jaundice, fatigue, dark urine, distension, and edema. Treatment options include augmentation therapy, which is essentially an infusion where the alpha-1 protein is derived from blood of healthy donors and given to patients who have the deficiency. Bronchodilators and portable oxygen concentrators can be ordered to facilitate breathing. For worst-case scenarios, a lung and/or liver transplant may be warranted. As far as foods, you can increase your intake of foods that contain vitamin D. Vitamin D is great for the lungs and increases the lungs' antimicrobial properties. I would recommend cod liver oil, salmon, and tuna. There are exercises which you can do to help lung health, like belly breathing and pursed lip breathing. I'll include a link in the description of the podcast from the American Lung Association that goes over these breathing exercises in detail. I will say this, if you do these exercises outside in your backyard, you may want to do them when allergy season is over. If you do them inside, make sure you have your indoor air filter changed and do this in a clean and relaxed atmosphere. You'll want to make sure that the air is clean as you can possibly make it in order to help your lung capacity. As always, check with your doctor. Gilbert syndrome occurs when the body does not produce enough liver enzymes. This affects the way that bilirubin is produced. Bilirubin is the waste that is produced when red blood cells are broken down. When your liver is healthy, you produce enough enzymes and you have small amounts of bilirubin in your body. When you have Gilbert syndrome, bilirubin builds up in your body, which can result in jaundice, which is the yellowish color found in the skin when people have a liver condition. Other symptoms include fatigue, dizziness, abdominal pain, diarrhea, and dark-colored urine. As far as treatments, this condition is not significantly dangerous. The condition may resolve on its own, and many people who have this condition are not aware until they have their routine blood work done and elevated bilirubin levels are found. The best thing is just to manage your stress, eat a well-rounded, healthy diet, and exercise regularly. Wilson's disease is a rare disease and occurs when the body cannot properly eliminate copper. A genetic mutation is responsible for preventing proper copper elimination. The result is copper accumulating in the liver, eyes, and brain. Excess copper is eliminated from the body via bile. When it accumulates, it can be life-threatening. Symptoms include fatigue, edema, jaundice, abdominal pain, joint stiffness, and Kaiser-Fleischer rings. Kaiser-Fleischer rings are the yellow-orange rings that can form around the iris of the eye. Chelating agents like cupramine are used, which remove copper from the body. Zinc can also be used as it prevents your body from absorbing copper. A liver transplant is also an option when other treatment plans fail. As far as diet, milk, coffee, lemonade, eggs, cheese, beef, turkey, and chicken are good foods to consume due to their low copper content. You may want to avoid soy-based foods, lima beans, avocados, tofu, and pork. You can exercise with no limitations other than what you're able to do, especially if you have joint pain. This would include running, jogging, walking, cycling, lifting weights, and swimming. Hemochromatosis is a condition where the body absorbs too much iron. Abnormalities in DNA inherited from both parents gives rise to this condition. When iron builds up in the body, this can be very dangerous. Too much iron in the body can lead to diabetes, arthritis, erectile dysfunction, and damage to vital organs. In regard to the liver, too much iron can lead to hepatitis, cirrhosis, enlarged liver, and liver failure. Other symptoms include jaundice, weakness, gallbladder infections, and thyroid issues. Treatments include chelation options, which include medication that can remove iron from the body. Simple phlebotomy is also an option where blood is removed intravenously. As far as diet, I'd recommend avoiding foods that are high in iron. This means red meat. Also, I would avoid vitamin C, as vitamin C helps to maintain iron levels. That being said, you may be at an increased risk for other infections, so make sure to wash your hands often during the day and take safety precautions. You may want to avoid sugar as well, as sugar helps iron absorption. Foods you can have with this condition include chicken, fish, eggs, yogurt, coffee, beans, nuts, apples, and avocados. For exercises, heavy exercises can lower iron levels. You can experience fatigue, which can drastically affect your ability to exercise. You can exercise to the best of your ability. Aerobic exercises like running, jogging, cycling, and swimming are good for this condition and your overall health. Hyperoxaluria is a genetic mutation that arises from having too much oxalate in your urine. Oxalate is a normal waste product that is removed from the body during urination. It can accumulate in the body, causing kidney stones, which can lead to kidney failure. The link to the liver is this. The enzyme that controls oxalate is made in the liver. A deficiency of the enzyme leads to overproduction and accumulation of oxalate in the body. Symptoms include back pain, fever, chills, painful urination, blood in the urine, kidney stones, as well as a feeling of wanting to pee but not being able to do so. There are medications that can reduce the amount of oxalate in the body. In 2020, the FDA approved the first drug to treat primary hyperoxaluria type 1 called Oxlumo. They go on to state that they conducted two trial studies and found in the first trial oxalate was decreased in patients by 65%, and in the second trial oxalate was decreased by 71%, respectively. Other treatments can include lithotripsy, aka kidney stone crushing, and in worst case scenarios, a liver transplant. A person with this condition will be told to drink plenty of water. If you remember back in the day, the saying took a hold to advise people to drink 8 glasses of water a day. Then much later on, the opposite took hold, advising that people do not need to drink 8 glasses of water a day. I would advise in drinking that much water, especially if you have this condition. Sugary, carbonated drinks are not necessary. Granted, they do contain water, but water is obviously the better alternative. You're going to drink something anyway, so try to incorporate as much water into your diet as possible, especially if you have this condition. Foods for this condition include fish, eggs, chicken, white rice, coffee, milk, apples, bananas, and lemons. You can select an exercise regimen that fits your particular lifestyle in regard to this condition. Just make sure to stay hydrated and drink plenty of water. Reye syndrome is as interesting as it is rare. It is an illness mostly seen in kids and teenagers after they recover from some sort of viral infection like chickenpox or the flu. It causes the brain and the liver to swell. In regard to the liver, it can cause fatty liver in children. Symptoms include fatigue, seizures, heavy breathing, belligerence, personality changes, and in worst case scenarios, coma. This condition is so rare that in some instances it is often misdiagnosed as encephalopathy or meningitis. As far as treatment, there is no specific treatment for this illness. IV fluids are often used and diuretics will be prescribed to help alleviate swelling as well as medication to prevent seizures. Diet is the same as for adults who have fatty liver disease. As far as exercise, you may want to discuss this with your child's pediatrician as exercise would be limited to the severity of any swelling that the patient may have, especially if it's dealing with swelling of the brain. Lysosomal acid lipase deficiency. Now, this affects children and adults and can cause fatty liver disease. When children are affected, it is called Wolman disease, and it can result in malnutrition due to the improper processing of fats. The deficiency of this enzyme prevents the proper breakdown of fats, which results in fat accumulating in the liver, which can in turn result in liver failure. Symptoms include delayed development, off-colored stools, enlarged liver, liver failure, and high cholesterol. Currently, treatment involves enzyme replacement therapy. Diet is the same as for adults who have fatty liver disease. Exercise should be limited to your physical ability. Next, I'll be talking about the liver fluke, aka fasciolasis. Now, this is a parasitic worm that invades the bile duct and liver. People can get infected by drinking contaminated water or eating vegetables that were washed with contaminated water. This is why it's always important to wash your vegetables. In addition, if it's a lettuce or spinach that comes in a container that's pre-washed, I still would advise washing it again anyway, just to be on the safe side. Symptoms include jaundice, enlarged liver, chills, fever, itching, vomiting, and abdominal pain. What I found about the liver fluke that is absolutely astonishing is that the CDC states that if you have liver flukes and they're left untreated, they can live in your body for up to 30 years. And that is actually the life cycle of the liver fluke. Medications include albendazole, bitracide, praziquantel, and triclobenzadol. As far as diet, make sure to wash all your vegetables completely and cook your food thoroughly. You can exercise as normal unless you're too ill to do so. Prevention. As with any illness, prevention is the key to longevity and optimal health. For liver health, the goal is to lower those liver enzymes and get your liver healthy so it can do its job. You have to have a healthy liver to filter the toxins in your body and properly process fat, among other things. Sometimes we will have a hepatic ailment, but otherwise we'll be healthy enough to not even notice. This all depends on the severity of the liver ailment. There's no reason why anyone should wait until an ailment befalls them in order to get in shape and live healthy. Exercises for liver health are exercises that one can do for overall optimal health. As stated earlier, aerobic exercises like cycling, swimming, running, walking, tennis, and dancing are great for the whole body and especially for cardiovascular health. Strength training builds healthy muscles and bones and burns fat. It goes without saying, strength training is a preventative measure from liver disease. This is aside from the genetic ailments that I mentioned. Strength training can include weightlifting, using a medicine ball, doing deadlifts, pull-ups, and good old-fashioned push-ups. In addition, there is visceral manipulation or massaging your liver. Some may think this is crazy. However, you can massage your liver to help stimulate the organ the same way you massage your stomach to relieve gas and make you pass gas. I invite you to research the topic and discuss this with your doctor and or physical therapist. I'll include a link in the description if you're interested in visceral manipulation. Foods for liver health are foods you can have for boosting overall health. These foods, as previously mentioned, can include water, spinach, oatmeal, blueberries, salmon, olive oil, coffee, tuna, turmeric, green tea, and beets. The premise is to have low-fat, low-calorie, healthy food. Foods to avoid are excess sugar, alcohol, salt, fried food, and soda. That's going to do it for Episode 7 of Season 2 of the Living Healthy Podcast. As always, I want to thank you for your continued support, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time. And remember, living healthy creates a better you.